Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by 123.ie. Don't make insurance a hot topic. Just go to 123.ie, where simple is smarter.
1890 453 106 is our local number. Our text number is 53106. That will cost you 30 cents. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. Joanna Fortune joins us once again for our parenting slot. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
First question is this. My 3-year-old son has a thing for feet and toes. He finds his own fascinating. He will always have his shoes and socks off so he can play with his toes. He also insists that the rest of us in the house don't wear shoes or socks, but we've managed to talk him around so he can wear socks. I have a complete foot aversion. His love of feet isn't an issue, or at least it wasn't, until he started insisting any guests or brief visitors, including the postman, take their shoes and socks off. When I say no, they won't be doing that. He has a major meltdown for not getting his way. I used to try and console him and calm him down, but now I just let him have his tantrum and walk away. Is this the right approach? Should I be discouraging in his love of feet? I'm completely flummoxed.
I mean, 3-year-olds are just amazing at latching on to the most obscure things and making it that this is the most important thing to them. I mean, yes, look, at a thing for feet and toes in this very focused way is unusual but not problematic. And it's very likely it'll pass as a phase he's interested in, because don't forget that young children, and he's bang on age for this, they learn about their worlds, their environments through touch, through exploration, through manipulating all around them, and they don't yet have societal inhibitions about what is and isn't appropriate, because that whole cause and effect thing hasn't kicked in. So it's very difficult to reason with a very unreasonable mind, which is why when you're saying you can have these toes and not these toes and certainly not strangers' toes, he just thinks you're being difficult, not that there's a societal piece to this. That doesn't come from yet. But I would say if he's just exploring and having fun, allow him to have it and express that. But of course, hold that gentle yet firm boundary. Actually, we get to choose, do we wear socks or not? No, strangers don't take their shoes off in the house. Only people who live here, you know, putting a nice boundary like that in. I think there's another way of maybe having a little bit of fun with this for him and kind of meeting him at his interest in feet, but redirecting it to an interest in his own feet. You could try with everyone in the house, putting everyone's foot down on a piece of paper and tracing around their foot and making cutouts. Mm. And then you could kind of stick those with blue tack now around the house, and he could guess whose foot is whose foot fits in it. He could try walking on top of the, following the footprints as a little walk around. You could do something creative like that. I think, and often what I'd advise parents who have limited time about playing with small children is every day, at least once, toes and nose your toddler. Rub your nose off their nose and play with their toes. So developmentally, this is very important. So you could play with his feet, you could rub, sing, count his toes. There's another little game that sometimes I play with the kids I work with where I scatter cotton balls around and I see, can they pick them up with their toes and drop them somewhere else? He's a little bit young, but he might be able to pick up and then drop up and drop. And that's a nice kind of motor skill exercise as well. And then offer lots of nice nurture, like soaking his feet, lotioning or powdering them, nice soft towel, making a fuss of him. But I suppose meeting him in his interest while holding that boundary. But I'm just saying all of that because I'm struck that he loves feet and this parent really doesn't. This parent has a foot aversion.
Yeah.
So it might take a little bit of you stepping a little bit in to meet him and having him step a little bit back to meet you somewhere in the middle. Mm. But as I said, if it's just exploring and having fun, then yes, allow him to express, but within the boundary. The boundary you're naming here is very appropriate.
Yeah, so let them have the meltdown. If
three-year-olds are going to have meltdowns anyway. Yeah. You know, it's just a matter of what, and so long as they're not going on and on and on. Like if it's a meltdown and it's over in kind of 10 seconds because you've walked away, that's more of a temper tantrum than a meltdown. And that's perfectly fine. And just don't walk away without saying anything. Just say, oh, you're having your tantrum right now. I'm going to be in this room right here. And when you're ready, you come on in and we'll play something.
Yeah.
So you're not walking away and ignoring them. You're saying, come to me and I want to play with you.
Mm. Yeah. But yeah, so that will just happen.
Oh, there's really, definitely, there, if it wasn't a tantrum about feet, it would be a tantrum about something.
Something else, legs or arms. My 11-month-old daughter, when she gets really upset, arches her back and holds her breath for what seems like a vast period of time. She is our only child and I've got used to her doing it. We got a babysitter recently and I'm going back to work. She has over 25 years experience and says she hasn't seen anything like this before. Yet she has seen kids do this, but not for so long. Should we be worried? We mentioned it to the doctor some months back and he didn't seem concerned, but now I'm very conscious of it again.
Yeah, I think this is actually quite a frightening thing to witness.
I would imagine
if
so,
anyone
yeah.
has seen it, it is. And no matter what I say now, I can't really take that worry away, because witnessing it, and I've seen it myself, it, no matter how you understand it, it's still quite a frightening thing to witness.
Yeah.
So for you and the childminder, that is quite difficult. I suppose it's about kind of looking at breath holding as a concept and then the different types of it. Breath holding does happen more than you think, actually, between 6 months and 6 years. Children can do it on and off or even consistently for that length of time, but it's most common 6 months to 6 years. And especially in the second year, which fits developmentally, because that's also the time when they're dealing with you putting boundaries and limit setting in place. Mm. And of course, we know developmentally it's their job to push and test your limits and your job to hold them. So we do see this breath holding, and especially what we'd call blue breath holding, which tends to be the one that's triggered by a shock, a sudden shock or trauma or pain or frustration and upset. You know, if a child gets really frustrated, it can trigger. But what you have to hold in mind is that this kind of breath holding in a child this young is most often an involuntary reflex as part of the crying mechanism. You know, deep breath in to cry and they just don't manage to breathe back, you know, exhale again. So often, and children don't have control over that kind of behaviour. It's not like they're doing this to be oppositional or defiant and you can say, just stop it now and breathe. That's not the way it works. They often don't have control. It usually lasts less than a minute. Now, I don't know, when you say that you haven't seen, the minder hasn't seen a child do it for so long, I'm not sure how long this child is doing. Any more than a minute, I would be going back to the GP with this.
Yeah.
It's usually a phase and not dangerous, even though it looks really frightening. It's usually not dangerous. In an extreme way, that blue breath holding, children can hold their breath and actually pass out, lose consciousness briefly. Now, that doesn't seem to be the case here. And it is more often that children who do it have a milder level of it, which is they hold their breath but don't pass out. The only other thing that I am aware of with this kind of behaviour, though, and it is worth going back to your GP to explore, is sometimes breath holding can correlate with lower iron levels. So it might be worth getting your GP to check for any iron deficiency, if only to rule it out.
Right. Okay. But the fact that the breath holding periods, she seems to be able to do it for longer, that might be just, she's just really good at holding her breath.
It could be that she has really good stamina.
Yeah.
It could be simply that's how it's manifesting. Generally, it's not more than a minute. And that sounds quite short. But if a child in front of you is holding their breath for a minute, that is a long time. So I would be, you know, try to time it the next time she does it and get a sense. And actually, if it's happening frequently enough, time a few of them. So when you go to the GP, you're saying there is a pattern. This is the average duration. This is what we're noticing. And if you're not happy with your GP response, seek a second opinion.
Yeah, yeah. My 2-year-old absolutely loves to shove things up her nose and in her ears. Food, Play-Doh, cotton wool, the lot. We've banned most things in the house because of it. But she still tries to put things that are far too big up her nose. How can I get her out of the habit? I fear one day she'll get something sharp and I'm not looking.
I mean, we're just seeing such brilliant, quirky little toddler behaviour today. Yes. Here's another one they
do. None of this is unusual, though.
It's not unusual, but there's always that little bit of it's mostly fine until it's not.
Yeah,
that line can be fine, because actually the putting things up nose and in ears tends to be a habitual behavior. So they're children this age, naturally inquisitive little people. They have very little fear. So, you know, of course, I'm exploring. I explore through touch and manipulation, as we said, with that 3-year-old and the foot thing. But it is a part of development. However, it's most common, this nose thing and the ear thing, in children 2 to 5 years old. So your child is bang on schedule for this, but you don't really want to be dealing with this for 3 years.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to reason and negotiate and explain why they shouldn't do this, because of the lack of fear, the lack of cause and effect. So you're going to have to use as much as any parent can. Vigilance and distraction. And of course, none of us have eyes in the back of our head, though sometimes we wish we did. So it's not always about watching your toddler. It might be about scanning the environment before you take your eyes off the toddler so that you can quickly go, what is within arm's reach, or climbing on the sofa, even arm's reach, for them to reach and grab. Sometimes you won't see them do it, but if there are, there can be symptoms about this kind of stuff. Like if it's something in the nose, often how you know there's a problem, because they can put really small things up there that can just nestle there for quite a long time, is that there can be a nasty smell that might come from one side of the nose and not the other. It could be something like a sinus infection, a very kind of dark mucus, or running a temperature. They would all be indicators that something's not quite right up there.
Right, okay, this is not calming anyone's nerves.
I know, yeah. Honestly, this is how it works. But, you know, I think, you know, if it's something that you feel is stuck, something that you cannot see and reach with the tweezers yourself, do not push things up a child's nose if you don't think it's going to get it out. If it's only going to make it worse, leave it alone. Then obviously you go straight to your GP and or A&E if needed. If you do find one, I would always say, if you do find one thing stuck, just have a look in case there's another. And another thing, because, you know, if they fit one thing up there, they will give a second one a go. As she gets a little older, do talk to her about it. But at two, I'm not going to say talk to a two-year-old about it, because that's like having the radiator on and the window open. It just won't land. There's another thing that doctors often recommend is they call it mother's kiss, but it's like a form of mouth-to-mouth. So if you know there's something up one side of the nose, say it's up the right nostril, you would cover the left nostril with your finger, cover their mouth with your mouth, and give a sharp blow to see, do you dislodge it that way? Generally, the advice would be make one good attempt at it yourself and then go to a professional.
Yeah, because that thing, I'm familiar with that, but it's like if their nose is blocked up, that you just do that but suck.
Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah.
To get their nose unblocked.
To get their nose, exactly.
Just a typical cold. It's disgusting, but it does
work.
It's
like that you can get that little tube thing, a froggy or something it's called, to do that. But it's that idea. But just be very cautious when you know your child has put something up their nose or in their ear, that you don't add to it by putting another thing in their ear to dislodge the first thing.
Yeah.
Reminds me of that Oliver Jeffers book, Stuck, you know, where you just keep throwing things up the tree to dislodge the first thing. If in doubt, go to the GP with it. But in terms of what do you do, because the fear about something sharp is real, you can't be looking at her 24/7, so don't set yourself up to fail. But it's about scanning the environment more than her, as best you can.
Of course, when they get a bit older, then especially when they realize that, oh, hang on now, I have a little chair, and I can bring the little chair with me and stand and help the little
chair. Not much older than this, she's probably already doing that. So it's like, think about through the eyes of a two-year-old, not your eyes. What can I reach? What can I reach on my toes? And what can I reach if I climb onto an armchair?
On the subject of breath holding, AD says, hi, whenever I've done first aid courses and someone asks about children holding their breath, we've been taught to just blow a quick breath in the child's face and it's enough to distract the child. So he or she will breathe without realizing it. Okay, that's a good idea. Connor says, my 2.5-year-old son suffers from breath holding and has passed out from it.
Yeah.
We need to blow air in his face to break the cycle. If he does pass out, it's okay. His body relaxes and he starts to breathe again.
Yeah.
Christopher says, our little boy used to hold his breath until he turned purple, then blue, then he would pass out. He did this when he was annoyed. He saw dozens of specialists and GPs. It's very normal. The thing is just to hang around and make sure they don't bang their head. Our boy used to fall over after he passed out. He grew out of it and is fine now. Tell your listener it's fine, says Christopher. And someone else says they used to do the thing and pass out as a kid. The doctor told my mother to ignore it. It worked.
Yeah, that's the classic blue breath holding behaviour in temper or frustration. And it's really good that people can give that advice, because I think when you're in it, it's very difficult to be that calm about it.
But that is
reassuring. Yeah,
that still sounds terrifying at the same time. Right, we do have to take a break after that. A 2.5-year-old that started stammering.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by 123.ie. Don't make insurance a hot topic. Just go to 123.ie, where simple is smarter.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Joanna Fortune still with us for our parenting slot. My 2.5-year-old has suddenly started stammering out of nowhere. None of the rest of us in the house do so, so she's not copying us. Her words and sentences have been fine up to this point. Why would this happen? Our assessment is not until early August, so any help would be great.
I mean, I'm delighted you're waiting on an assessment, because that would be the bottom line advice for this is, you know, go to a speech and language therapist. Just to kind of hold in mind, though, that this kind of language disfluency is quite common between 2 and 5 years old. It tends to be when they're starting to combine words or construct longer sentences that this kind of word hesitation or jumbled up words can actually happen. So wait and see what your speech and language therapy assessment throws up in terms of what's going on, and they'll give you very practical advice. But while you're waiting, because I think it's very hard to be in that place of waiting and anticipating, I would say don't respond too much to the stammer, but show interest in what she says rather than how she's saying it. So stay very calm and patient, and don't correct her or direct her. Just let her get through it. And whatever you do, don't finish her sentences for her. Just be patient and calm. You could do a thing where you suggest, if she's getting stuck on her word, that you suggest a pause, that you just go, amber light, let's pause, deep breath, green light, go again. And see, is that enough for her to settle into it? It may or it may not. It really depends on what the cause is, to be honest. Be aware of your own speech rate. You know, if you tend to speak quite quickly, she may be trying to keep up pace with you as well, and that's too much for her. So consciously slow down your own speech rate, particularly when you're with her, so that she's staying pace with you. And I would say do that 15 minutes of play I'm always talking about. Do that every single day with her, because it's a doing rather than saying way of processing what's going on.
Yeah.
Make sure it's uninterrupted and you're 100% with her. In this instance, I would be doing that very much child-led play. So let her lead the play and you follow her lead. And that's just going to help her express herself in other ways, other than just verbally. And it may be enough for her to release some of what's pent up as well. Do a thing at home with however many of you are there, where you each take turns talking and you cannot interrupt the talker until they're finished, so that everybody gets a turn and gets used to waiting on the first person to finish. And if you've got a very hectic, active, fast pace home life, which most people with small children do, let's be honest, or if you're running from one thing to another, see between now and her assessment, are there ways that you can eliminate some of that, so that it's much calmer, slower paced, and it's just moving slower in general, because that's what you're trying to co-regulate her to slow down a bit. I think those are just some practical things to try, but I would still be saying you've got to wait for the professional assessment of the speech and language therapist.
Yeah, and then we'll see. Colin says, I got through stammering as a child by singing my words.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe that's a possibility. Now, the question that Joanna's really been looking forward to. My 6-year-old, almost 7-year-old, keeps getting head lice. It has been an ongoing issue for about 18 months now. He isn't the instigator of it, as the rest of us don't have it, but someone in the class or school does, and he seems to get them every time. We're all exhausted from them, as they're such a rigmarole to get rid of. Thankfully, we are currently in a good spell, but it's only a matter of time before they're back. The main issue I can see is that it's affecting his confidence. He's been invited for a sleepover and he says he doesn't want to go because he's dirty and he will give his friend lice. I told him all kids get lice and they are gone, that he is not a dirty. I think some kids might have said something to him about the lice in school, and for the last while he's been talking very negatively about himself. I spoke to the teacher and she said she'd keep an eye out. How can I help? And nothing I say is changing his mood.
I mean, it's just even thinking about head lice has that effect where you immediately feel itchy. So I think as parents, we have to be very mindful that, yes, you have done and said all of the right things here. Yeah. But we have to be aware that when we spot lice in our children, or we're the ones who have to de-lice them, that even though we might be saying the right things, our facial muscles, our body language may be saying, oh, gross. And, you know, that he knows this is not something you relish either, and that you're not like, I mean, nobody likes it, let's be honest. I mean, look at the HSE have a guideline document for control of infection in children that you could certainly download that, particularly if it's a recurring thing through school. I would be giving him lots of reassurance, like you are doing, of how lice happen in clean hair as well, and that it's not about having dirty hair. It's just something that happens when you're a child and an adult, let's be honest. And as I said, watch your own, let's call them disgust impulses or disgust reactions. They could even be something you're not even aware you're doing.
Yeah.
But if you know thinking about head lice makes you shiver, then you're absolutely communicating a resistance when you go to do it. So other than that, I would say, like, one of the best advice with head lice and the fact that it recurs, sometimes the experts, and there are experts in this, you know, headliceexperts.ie, that exists.
Yeah.
And there are people who've chosen to specialize in this area. Mm. So check that out. Check them out if it's something that keeps recurring. But also the some of the advice out there is that you'd wash and dry your bedding at a boil wash level to make sure you're killing anything. You know, vacuuming rugs, furniture, and a minimum, this is the key bit with head lice, a minimum of 2 treatments. So you treat the problem, and then within 2 weeks, you, even if you don't see anything, you retreat the hair. And actually in that 2 weeks, you fine comb the hair daily for 2 solid weeks.
It's such a pain doing
It's a
that.
Huge pain. Yeah. But you know what? Often we think we've got them all and there could be a tiny little egg left, and that's all it takes to have a second outbreak. So certainly keep an eye on that. And there are lots of kind of herbal sprays that you can apply to the hair as a precautionary thing. You know,
tea tree oil. And
exactly,
all that, stuff.
That those kinds of treatments that you, when the hair is clean and you know there's no lice, it can help keep it that way. And you know, talking to children about, you know, not putting their heads together. And I did read something a while back where, you know, they were saying that there's an increase in head lice because of, you know, selfie culture and everybody getting their heads in for photos and touching heads. I think that might be a little anecdotal, though, in terms of observation, but not sharing hairbrushes, not swapping hats, things like that, that you could do practically. But otherwise, I mean, it's just keep doing what you're doing. It's just an unfortunate part of childhood and school.
Yeah, that it is. It,
you know, your school is certainly not alone with this, and it is so difficult to fully eradicate it once it's there.
Two things I'd say, and I have a lot of experience in this. Let's put that mildly. The first is that is the attitude of the school is quite important, because it doesn't sound like this parent is getting any warnings from the school. The school should have a more open policy and say, we've an outbreak. This happens every few weeks as an outbreak. Like, he didn't invent head lice himself. He got it from somebody else, almost certainly in the school.
Yeah.
But the fact that there's this, oh, you're dirty thing going on, that they haven't normalised it because everybody gets it.
And that actually would be really helpful. And I think if the school make it that there is, now the school may not want to acknowledge there is a problem. Might,
but then they're living in cloud cuckoo land.
Absolutely, because this is an issue in every school.
Yeah, every single school, and it's nothing to do with dirtiness.
No, of course not. No.
But some people apparently are slightly more prone to getting head lice than others.
Ah.
Their blood is a bit more delicious or whatever. The same way that some people, when they get a bite of a bug during the summer, they have a bigger reaction than others. Antihistamines apparently are a help in that regard.
Ah, that is new information. That's really useful. I did not know that.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting.
Yeah, so antihistamines. Now, it won't make it go away, of course, but it does help a bit in terms of the treatment and especially repetition and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, because that, you actually, getting rid of them is only stage one. Keeping them
gone
is the next
problem.
Piece. Yeah.
Oh, that's the problem. Then again, a lot of people are seeing exactly what you were saying. Stop! The mere mention of head lice has been scratching my head. Why not get an electric comb for that kid who's worried about the lice? He can comb it through his head every night, and it kills on contact.
Yeah.
I've never used one, but I have heard about
those. I haven't used one either, but I am aware of them. Yeah.
Our school adopts a zero tolerance policy towards lice. In fact, they sent a text just today saying there was going to be a school-wide non-homework night, so everyone does a check and does something about the latest outbreak. That's a good idea.
Now that's a really good idea. That's very proactive.
Yeah. My 2.5-year-old son started stammering over the last few weeks too, but I think it's from me. I stuttered very badly as a child.
It can be hereditary.
As did my wife. And so does my four-year-old. When excited, I'm conscious of it as I speak very fast and try to slow myself down. We drop to eye level and show them they have our attention and try not to rush them. Says Connor.
That's really good
advice.
That's
interesting.
Yeah.
My four-year-old developed a severe stammer overnight. I have her on the waiting list for speech assessment, but I got a great handout from the HSC with tips for how to handle it. I have found that the competition to be heard in the household is 99% of the problem. Since we started taking turns to talk, making everyone aware of the need to be patient and let her be heard, she comes up in leaps and bounds. That's, that's a very good point. We have a knit note. This is going back to head lice. It goes home to the relevant room. It's part of Monday's homework every week to have the children's hair checked.
See, that seems to be
it. Normalise
really
it. Make it part of the routine.
Solution, yeah.
Yeah. It's not someone else. The parents in the daughter's class agree to comb twice a week for the year, as last year there were lice in the classroom almost every week and we were sick of it. I'm not sure everyone is doing it, but definitely fewer cases this year. Very good advice. Now, something you shouldn't do, this is refers back to the 2.5-year-old sticking things up our nose. Someone says, reminds me of when my 2-year-old put sweet corn up her nose. We resorted to the end of a pen, sellotape to the end of a Hoover to try and suck it out.
No.
Needless to say, that didn't work. And the corn popped out the next day when she laughed. Thank God she hadn't developed a fear of Hoovers.
No.
So do not use a Hoover. Maybe tickling. That might work.
That could work. But that's
giggles.
A whole other form of torture. Yeah.
Joanna, thanks so much for coming into us.
Thank
Joanna
you.
Fortune there. We're going to take a break. After that, the first governor of New Zealand.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by 123.ie. Don't make insurance a hot topic. Just go to 123.ie, where simple is smarter.